чорна, чорнява, як циганка. Чим си полюбила, чим си полюбила чорнявого Іванка. Чим си полюбила, чим си полюбила чорнявого Іванка. Іванка та Іванка, сорочка вишиванка, високий та стрункий, високий та стрункий, ще й на
from a CD just arrived here at Nosh Holos called Rešeto. That was artist Oksana Mucha from Lviv and traditional Ukrainian folk song Oy Chorna Yesi Chorna, I am a dark-eyed beauty. І таким веселим темпом розпочали нашу програму. Вітаю вас всіх, шановні радіослухачі, на радіопередачі «Наш голос». Говорить Павіна Макворі, дякую, що рішили прибути зі мною наступну годину. Ми маємо дуже цікаві новини на сьогоднішній програмі. Hello there, and welcome to Nosh Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. I'm Paulette Demchuk-Makwari, your host, по-українське in Ukrainian, Pavlina, and I am delighted to have you with me. Whether you're listening on AM, FM, shortwave, online or in-flight, or to the podcast, welcome, vitaju. We have a great program lined up for you. Vesel Pavlovsky has another cultural capsule. Guest hosts Father Ihor Kutash will be by with Ukrainian Christian Heritage, and Sylvia Molnar will share a yummy dill bread recipe. As well, Keith Perron of PCJ Media will bring news from Ukraine, and we'll have our usual proverb of the week, upcoming events, and also a guest interview with the popular and prolific children's author Marsha Skripik. But first, another tune from Oksana Mucha's fabulous album Rešeto, and we'll tell you a little bit more. We'll hopefully do a CD of the week feature. That the whole package came in, and she models herself on Kvitka Sisik, and there's all kind of almost a cult following in Ukraine about that. So more about that in a future edition of Nosh Holos, but for right now, here she is with a song that sounds very much like Kvitka Sisik, Oy Misyatsu Misyachenko, a song to the moon.
Вечір світиш, вечірні, ти козаче, гарний хлопче, вечір прийдеш, вечірні, ти козаче, гарний хлопче, вечір прийдеш вечірній. А я піду попід гору, а ти підеш долином. Чи ти тужиш так за мною, як я серце за тобою? Чи ти тужиш так за мною, як я серце за Я тужу, та й не тужу, та й тужити не буду. Знайду собі іншу любку, з нею жити я буду. Вишеньки, черешеньки, а з них листя опало. Любив козак дівчиноньку, та йому все пропало. Любив козак дівчиноньку,
Radiocast.ca – це наша адреса в інтернеті. Українська радіопрограма з Ванкувера «Четверта хвиля».
Ukrainian programming – the fourth wave from the Burnaby Mountain.
Ми виходимо на хвилі 91 FM в Ванкувері. Також ловіть наш потік через веб-сайт cjsf.ca.
It's the 38th annual Ukrainian Pesenka Festival in Beggarville, Alberta, July 1st to 3rd. Enjoy traditional bread baking, folk art display, the sights and sounds of Yarmarok, Putt for Cancer, mini kids activities, and three grandstand shows featuring Vasil Papadyuk. Evenings of Bavas, workshops with Jeff Nortonson and the team from So You Think You Can Dance Canada, Ivana Kupala, Chaika and Violin Workshop, and so much more. Children 12 and under are free, so bring the entire family to Ukrainian Pesenka Festival in partnership with Travel Alberta. For more information, visit PesenkaFestival.com or call 780-632-2777.
Заграйте мені на прощання, та ночі, що його так люблю, щоб знову ожило кохання і серце збудило зі сну. Вальсом рили вітони, мир там буде мене поведи. Хай сном з ним залишиться згадка про горе і дні журби. Тільки вальс оцей чарівний, як безшурно він звенить. Я сміюся, я танцюю, весело час біжить. Тільки вальс оцей чарівний звеселить мені життя. Він співає, він говорить, в нім ціла моя душа. Заграє
хай тебе ніщо проснулись, всі люди з байдужого сну. Заграйте ви їм, щоб почули цю пісню веселу мою. А як пісня лине даремне, ти не прийдеш, кохана, до мене. Та грай мені скрипка тоді голосніше, розвій тугу. Тільки вальс оцей чарівний, як безшурно він звелить. Я сміюся, я танцюю, і весело час лежить. Тільки весла цей чарівний звеселить мені життя. Він співає, він говорить, ним ціла моя душа.
And that was Ukraine's Vasil Bokoch from a CD called Chare Lvova, Charms of Lviv.
And now, Ukrainian food flair with Sylvia Molnar. Tips for Ukrainian cooking.
Hello. Oh, for the love of dill, one of my favorite herbs. You could say I have a violent passion for dill. Luckily, it is available year-round. Did you know that during the medieval period, Europeans grew copious amounts of dill to create love potions and protect against witchcraft? Remember, it's always best to use fresh dill to achieve the proper flavor. You can enjoy dill with potatoes, dips, and salad dressings, in egg, chicken, and fish dishes, and benefit from dill's nutritional value, too. Here's a quickie for Dill Bread Express, so get your pans ready. You'll need the following: 1 loaf of French bread, 1/2 cup soft butter, 2 tablespoons fresh, finely chopped dill. Cut the bread in half lengthwise and mix the dill with the soft butter and generously spread on both sides. Put sides together and wrap in foil. Bake at 400 degrees Fahrenheit for about 15 minutes. Serve warm. This is a great make-ahead that can be frozen if desired. Treat your taste buds. It's Ukrainian.
Thanks, Sylvia, for sharing your Ukrainian culinary expertise on Ukrainian Food Flair here on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. Up next, Father Ihor Kutash of St. Mary the Protectress Ukrainian Orthodox Church in Montreal. Father Ihor comes to us courtesy Simon Kuklevsky, producer of the radio program Ukrainian Time in Montreal.
On Holy Thursday in the year 1930, there was a tragic martyrdom of Basil Vasily Zelentsov, Bishop of Priluki, Vicar of Poltava. He was shot in the Lubyanka prison in Moscow. Basil was born in 1870 in the year of Zamorayevo in the Rezhan governorship, about 200 kilometers southeast of Moscow. He participated as a layman in the renowned 1917-1918 Sobor of the Church of Moscow, which sought to rejuvenate the Church of the Russian Empire. And one of its actions was approving the publication of the Book of the Gospels in Ukrainian. This text, in Church Slavonic characters, is widely used to this day, thanks to the initiative of Patriarch Mstislav Skripnik, for decades the primate of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church of the USA, and later the first primate of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church Kievan Patriarch, who had it reprinted in the diaspora. Bishop Theophan Bistrov, who saw Basil Zelentsov at the Sobor, brought him to his eparchy to Poltava, and soon ordained him as a pastor in the Holy Trinity Church. Father Basil fulfilled his pastoral duties with zeal, and his kindness led him to adopt 4 orphans, children of a priest, to raise as his own. He also organized a dynamic youth group as an alternative to the Komsomol. Repression by the communist authorities was inevitable. It came to a head over the issue of state confiscation of church valuables. There was a famine in the Volga region of Russia. Patriarch of Moscow Tikhon approached the head of state Vladimir Lenin with an offer to help the suffering by selling some valuables of the church which were not in use so that these funds could be used for this cause. Lenin took this offer to be a challenge to the Soviet government, implying that the church would help the poor while the government did nothing. He quickly gathered his Politburo, and a decree was issued in February 1922 ordering the confiscation of all church valuables. He hoped to annihilate forever the power of the church. Father Basil pleaded, "We shall give you 2 or 3 times more than you ask. Only do not trouble our temples." It was in vain. He was arrested, and a death sentence was issued. The pastor's words to his devastated flock attending the hearing were, "The Lord be with you. Be at peace. God's will is in everything, so I am at peace. Go to your homes in peace." Nonetheless, so many people went to Lenin asking for mercy for their pastor that the autocrat gave in, and the death sentence was commuted to 10 years imprisonment. Father Basil's conduct in prison led prisoners and jailers to respect and love him. He was transferred to a prison in Kharkiv and then amnestied. Still another child was added to his family, the little son of a beggar who had died near the prison. Now there were 5 youngsters under his care. Father Basil resumed his ministry in Poltava. He was ordained bishop of Priluki, a city in the Chernihiv province, which at the time was part of the eparchy. Thus he became its vicar. Bishop Basil served in Poltava for only 1 year before his next arrest, which would lead to his martyrdom. He was no less zealous for having been in prison. His final arrest was in Kharkiv, where the authorities had ordered him to present himself with all speed. They had learned to be wary of the anger of the populace in a city which Vladyka ministered. This happened in the late summer of 1925 or 26. Vladyka was sent to the Solovki prison on the White Sea, which had been a monastery before Lenin decreed this new use for it. In 1928, he was exiled to the province of Irkutsk in Siberia. He continued his pastoral ministry everywhere he went in conditions of great hardship. This included taking part with other imprisoned bishops in letters denouncing Metropolitan Sergius' declaration, making peace with the Soviet government, and calling upon their fellow archpastor to repent of such submissiveness. His last written words, preserved by some of his spiritual children, were, "Peacefully I observe the setting of the sun. Thus also is my life arriving at its setting." Vladyka's work finally led to his being sent to the Lubyanka prison in Moscow, where his earthly ministry culminated in a martyr's death. His example continues to inspire all people of faith to this day.
You're listening to Nash Holos, Ukrainian Roots Radio, broadcasting from Vancouver Island, Canada, for PCJ Radio.
Hello, I'm Vasily Pavlovsky, and this is Cultural Capsule, especially for Nash Holos. There are many individuals who have contributed a great deal to the understanding of elements of ethnography of Ukrainians, from the nuances of language to the folk tales and their messages. Today's persona on Cultural Capsule, had he still been alive, would have been 140 years old on May 9th. Though long is the time that we see such longevity in humans. However, the work that he conducted in order that Ukrainian ethnography be better understood lives on to this day. He was born in the village of Velesenyiv, in what is today the southeastern region of Ternopil Oblast, but closer to Ivano-Frankivsk than Ternopil, he received his formative education in the high schools of Bulchach and Stanislaviv, which is now called Ivano-Frankivsk. In his early 20s, he entered the Faculty of Philosophy at Lviv University, where he studied under Mikhail Hrushevsky, later to become head of the Tsentralna Rada in Ukraine's stillborn attempt at nationhood, and under Oleksandr Kolesa, the uncle of Oleksandr Kolesa, the composer featured on December 12, 2010 issue of Cultural Capsule. When he completed his studies at the university, Volodymyr Natyuk became academic secretary of the Shevchenko Scientific Society and held this position until his death on October 6, 1926. Though the ethnographic studies he conducted and the works he published allowed many of those who followed to understand the underpinnings of Ukrainian ethnos, particularly that of the Lemko people. These publications included such works as ethnographic materials on the Hungarian Rusyns, Galician Rusyn national legends, Kolomike, a type of lively folk song, Haivki, spring songs, folk tales of the Opreshke. The Opreshke could be equated to the legend of the Merry Men of Robin Hood, Koletke and Shtedrivke, and many other publications. Somehow I like to think that the work he conducted was passed on to me in the form of a song. The song in particular was one about Oleksa Dolbush, who lived from about 1700 to 1745. And as legend has it, he robbed from the rich to give to the poor. There were numerous times in the early 1990s when visiting friends in Ukraine and walking home from some gathering that one of my best friends, Andrei Venichuk, would sing all 44 verses of the song of Dolbush. I am certain that the song, and countless others that are part of the rich Ukrainian folk history of the people of the Carpathian Mountains, remain with us today due to the work of Volodymyr Natyuk. I'm Vasily Pavlovsky, and this week's Cultural Capsule featured ethnographer Volodymyr Natyuk.
Up next is an interview recorded via Skype with award-winning Ukrainian-Canadian author Marcia Skripik about her most recent award, The Crystal Kite, and her most recent novel, Stolen Child.
I have on the line with me now Ukrainian-Canadian author extraordinaire. This is a lady who has been writing for quite a while now. I first heard learned of her with her first book. It was called Silver Threads back in the 1990s, and since then she has gone on to write many more on a Ukrainian-Canadian theme and other genocide themes as well, and that is the theme that she chooses. Although her audience is young children and young adults, she does pick these heavy topics, but has turned out to be very, very successful and become a very popular author. She has won many awards and been nominated for many more, the most recent being The Crystal Kite, and that is one of the things that we're going to talk about with Marcia right now. Thank you so much for joining us, Marcia.
My pleasure, Paula. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, now, how many books have you published now? I've lost count.
You know what? I've lost count, too. What I say now is over a dozen. I'm not very good in arithmetic. I'm good at writing books, but not so good in counting them.
Well, congratulations on that. And on this most recent award, and we'll talk about some of the others, but the Crystal Kite. Now, remember when you had just announced it in your modest way, you always do, that Crystal Kite is, of all the awards that you've received, this one is really especially important. And why would that be?
Well, it's a peer award, for one thing. So it's my fellow children's authors who nominated me for this and then voted me. And I won it for the Americas, which is amazing. It's a world award. It's given by SCBWI, which is the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators worldwide. And so throughout the world, there were 15 winners. And my book won for all of Canada, Mexico, Central, and South America, one winner. So I'm just stunned that, you know, that I was honored this way, especially by my fellow children's authors, because that's a really tough audience. You know, they've got finely honed twit filters. So you know, I just thought that was wonderful. I didn't even know that I was shortlisted until one of my fellow shortlisted nominees let me know. And then we were rooting for each other because, you know, they like to say that children's writing is a bunny-eat-bunny world, but I've never found that. I've found that children's authors are very supportive of each other.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have been thrilled if you know, one of my fellow authors won, but I got to say, I was really thrilled when I won, too.
Indeed. Well, a lot of us are thrilled for you as well, because for a worldwide award like this, and yours was the only one in this area, in this region?
There were seven who were shortlisted in all of Canada, Mexico, Central and South America. So seven were notable books.
Wow.
The seven were chosen from literally hundreds, maybe, I don't know, my estimate would be 400 books.
Wow.
From all those areas. Because it had to have been published in 2010, but like that's a pretty broad area for all the books to be selected from.
Wow.
And so, you know, the shortlist was seven, and of those, four were Canadian. And they were all really good books, and I would have been happy if, really, truly, if any of them had won.
Wow, wow.
But the really neat thing is that to have this kind of prominence for a story that is set in World War II Ukraine,
mm-hmm.
I mean, how many books have you even seen, like novels for mainstream readers, written on that topic, even written on the topic? And so for it to receive that kind of critical acclaim for a topic like that is just outstanding.
Indeed.
And that's what really thrills me the most, is that I think that it's an award for Ukrainians and for Ukrainian experience in World War II, because many people who read Stolen Child, what they said to me is that they had no idea that this happened in World War II. Not a clue.
Now, for the benefit of new listeners who have recently discovered Nash Holos in parts of the world that haven't heard Nash Holos before and may not be aware of what you do, who you are, and what we do here in Canada in the Ukrainian community. Tell us a little bit about Stolen Child, and what is this topic? It's set in World War II, but it's a topic that even people who know about what happened during World War II in Ukraine weren't really necessarily aware of this particular the theme of your book.
That's very true, Paulette. It's about the Lebensborn program. And that was the Nazis, when they invaded Poland and Ukraine, saw that there were an awful lot of blonde, blue-eyed people, and also people that seemed to be far too intelligent to be subhuman. And so they came up with this mad idea that people who fell into their genetic parameters must not be really Polish or Ukrainian. They must really be Goths, like, you know, the old ancient Visigoths, so the lost seed of the German nation.
Sorry, Marcia, you're saying subhuman.
Well, yes, because Ukrainians were considered subhuman by the Nazis. They were not considered human. The Nazis had a hierarchy of human beings, and at the very bottom were Jews and Gypsies, and the Nazis wanted to kill every single Jew and Gypsy in the world. The ones who were one rung up were the Slavs, and that was Poles, Ukrainians, Czechoslovakians, and they wanted to kill 80% of them, leave the other 20% to be slaves. But it was always a plan of the Nazis to kill the bulk of Slavs, of Eastern Europeans, Slavic people. And also, there was a differentiation between Western Ukrainians and Eastern Ukrainians. Eastern Ukrainians were considered even lower on the humanity scale than Western Ukrainians, and they were treated incredibly brutally. But anyways, when they started to initiate this program of genocide, and they came to Ukraine and Poland, they found that there were these people who looked like they were German, and they didn't want to have too much to do with the adults because they felt that they would be too indoctrinated into Ukrainian ways. But what they thought that they could do is steal children, very young children who could be brainwashed into thinking that their own Ukrainian parents were bandits and thieves and stolen them, and that they could make them into Germans with brainwashing.
And so you wrote this book called Stolen Child, based mm-hmm. On true facts.
Oh, yes, and also the way that I heard about this, because how do you hear about something that has been hidden?
Right.
And for me, my mother-in-law lost half of her classmates to the Lebensborn program.
Oh, wow.
And so on her deathbed, my mother-in-law, well, I shouldn't say on her deathbed because by that time she wasn't talking, but just a few weeks before she died, she asked me why I had never written about what happened to her and her classmates in World War II. She said, "You've written all these books, but you've never written about what happened to me, and I've never read anything in books about what happened to me." And she says, "It's like no one believes what happened to me." She said, "Why can't you write about what happened to me and my classmates?" So I promised her that I would. And about 2 weeks before she died, I did a really extensive interview with her. And that was the seed of Stolen Child. And when she did die, I just felt that I had to put everything else aside and write this book. My mother-in-law lived through two waves of Nazi invasions, and they actually took over her house. And so she had to live through that as a young child. And one day, I mean, it wasn't that they just took over the house. They didn't allow her and her mother and father to leave the house, so they basically had to wait on them, you know, cook them, cook food for them, shine their shoes, various things, right? And one day, her mother overheard that there was an action that was happening at her school. And so my mother-in-law, Lydia, was not allowed to go to school the next day. When she went the day after, half of her classmates had disappeared. And it was all the blonde, blue-eyed girls who had been taken.
As she noticed, she noticed that at that time, the physical appearance of these students?
Well, yes, because my mother-in-law was not blonde and blue-eyed. So, yes, she noticed it, and of course, because they were all of a certain physical type that were taken. But she had heard rumors about what would happen to them, and she told me what she thought had happened to them, and she'd never heard from these kids ever again.
Wow. How old was she at the time?
At that time, she was 15.
15.
And what they were taken for was a different part of the Lebensborn program than what I write about in Stolen Child. Because there were two different things. One of the things that they did was take very young children and brainwash them into thinking they were German. And with those kids, what they would do is they would measure 64 individual body parts to make sure that they were truly Aryan.
Incredible.
Like even two parts, taking calipers to measure the nose alone, two different parts. So if you had a single feature that made you non-Aryan, then you would be sent either to a slave labor camp or to a death camp. You were never sent back home. We're talking very young children, some as young as 4.
Whoa.
And so, but what they had this other part where they had a breeding program, and this is where the 15-year-olds were taken.
Oh.
So they weren't so concerned about the 64 body measurements, but they did want them to be blonde, blue-eyed, and, you know, fairly good-looking. And they took them and they put them into another kind of Lebensborn home where they would be raped by selected German soldiers until they became pregnant. And then they would be looked after fairly well as they were, you know, the baby was gestating. And then once the baby was born, the girls would be killed. And then those babies would be taken into German homes.
That's horrific.
Well, and it's a part of history that we just don't hear about. It's just been completely hidden. And part of the reason is because as Nazi Germany was falling, the very first records that were destroyed, even before they destroyed the records about the concentration camps, they destroyed all the documentation about these children and the babies because they wanted to keep them.
They wanted to keep some? What do you mean?
They wanted to keep the children. They didn't want them repatriated.
Oh, I see. Oh, my God.
So it seems like, you know, a 7-year-old, imagine, has just gone through all this brainwashing, everything else. The world war ends, And then the mother tries to find this child, finds the child, but there's no documents to back her up. And then also the child says, no, you're not my mother. This is my mother and father.
Wow.
And points to the Germans. And this actually happened. Many, many parents found their children at the end of the war, and the children refused to go with their parents.
Oh, how heartbreaking.
So, well, it's just this huge thing that happened. And so what I did with Stolen Child was I took that as the background information. That's not a story in itself. This is
no.
historical information.
Right.
But I imagined a girl, much like what my mother-in-law would have been. I made her younger than that so that she would have come over to Canada as a 12-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
But that, like, that's in early 1950, 51. But so she would have been taken by the Germans and brainwashed when she was much younger than that. But she comes to Canada. She doesn't really understand her own background.
Mm-hmm.
She's with this other Ukrainian couple that are not her family. And she doesn't understand why she's with them, but they're kind to her. So the book starts out, the woman who calls herself my mother. So the reader knows
mm-hmm.
right off the bat that there's
right.
something that's going on. But... So while she's finally in Canada in a time of security, her day-to-day experiences here as a new immigrant keep on giving her flakes and flashes of a disturbing life from before. And she tries to fit together her past, sort of like pieces of a jigsaw puzzle. But, you know, if you took two jigsaw puzzles and smushed them together and then tried to make one puzzle out of it. And that's what's happened to her because she's had two distinctly different lives and she doesn't really know how they go together. And so the book is written in thriller mode, mystery mode. So as you're reading, as the reader is delving into the story, they find out about the girl's day-to-day life. Her name is Nadia, her day-to-day life, but they also get flakes and flashes just like she does of the past. And so the reader is trying to puzzle together exactly what happened to her in the past as well. And it's not until the last few pages that the reader and Nadia really know what has happened.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the mystery stays pretty much to the end as well because people don't know about this part of history.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like they can remember another book that they read like it because
mm-hmm.
they're just not all that available.
Right.
And the other reason that I'm very happy that this book has done so well, it gives wider readership and also understanding to what has happened to Ukrainians in World War II. But also it will broaden the audience for my next book, which is called Making Bombs for Hitler. And that book is about this girl's older sister who, when she went through the selection process, she didn't have the 64 body parts measuring up, so she was sent to a work camp, and she was 9 years old.
Wow.
And, you know, there were children, there are documented cases of children who were as young as 5 who had been sent to slave labor camps.
Wow. Wow. Well, that's going to, I've read Stolen Child, and it, well, I couldn't put it down. And
Thank you.
I'm looking forward to, well, that's actually the same, it's ditto for all of your books, Marcia. But I'm looking forward to Making Bombs for Hitler. Now, that will be coming out when?
Spring of 2012.
Okay. And
it's already written,
uh-huh.
but Scholastic takes a long time putting a book together, doing good mm-hmm. editing, doing good fact-checking. And so... I always have to have my books written for them a year in advance.
Okay, it's Stolen Child now is on the market and it's available. How can people get it?
If you're in Canada and you're a student, you can get it from your Scholastic flyer at school, or you can go into any bookstore, and if it's not on the shelf, you can just order it online. If you're in any other part of the world, only Canadian rights, we've kept world rights, my agent and I right now. But other than that, you can order it online. I think it's available on Amazon pretty much anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Marcia, for that story. Even as much as I've spoken to you and followed you in your path and writing this book, you gave even more information than I was aware of. So thank you so much for sharing that with all of us, and congratulations on this wonderful award.
Thank you so much.
And looking forward to reading your next book.
Thanks, Paulette.
Thanks, Marcia.
You're listening to Nash Holos, Ukrainian Roots Radio, broadcasting from Vancouver Island, Canada, for PCJ Radio.
Ukrainian News Outlook. The headlines for the week ending May 27th. Grain quotas removed. Child protection strategy. Women bear it all in Kiev. And Dubai's Fly Dubai starts flights to Ukraine. I'm Keith Patton. Ukraine, one of the world's top grain exporters, has removed grain export quotas that have helped drive up global food prices and hit domestic agribusinesses hard. The move will ease concerns in the global wheat market about supplies in the second half of the year, as Western Europe and the southern part of the United States, two key producing regions, suffer a drought that is likely to reduce output significantly. The wheat prices for the new crop, which will be harvested in the next 3 months, have surged 245 euros a ton, significantly above last year's prices. As part of its presidency of the Committee of Ministers of the Council of Europe, Ukraine will initiate the elaboration of a new Council of Europe's Child Protection Strategy for 2012-2015, said the Ukrainian Foreign Minister in his opening speech at the International Conference Combating Violence Against Children, from Isolation Actions to Integrated Strategies in Kiev on Tuesday. He stressed that the Council of Europe successfully implemented a strategy to protect the rights of children in 2009 to 2011, which aimed at combating violence against children. The Ukrainian presidency sees its task of combating the efforts of the Council of Europe member states to prepare a new strategy for 2012-2015, the minister noted. He also stressed that in addition to activities at the international level, Ukraine will initiate a number of national projects in this area. We clearly understand that along with the activities and cooperation internationally, we should take appropriate steps nationally, he said. Around the world, Ukraine is mainly known for a pair of boxing brothers and the artfully braided blonde hair of the former Ukrainian Prime Minister, Yulia Tymoshenko. However, during her time in government, she didn't manage to establish more rights for women in the country. That is among the poorest and most corrupt in Europe. There is a group, however, in Ukraine that is planning to change this and will be going topless in Kiev. Melveka Arden has the details.
It is Monday morning, shortly after 10 o'clock. A cafe in the center of Kiev is buzzing with several dozen young, pretty, scantily clad women. Lipstick, makeup, and hair brushes are handed around. Soon they'll head out to the street for a protest, topless.
It's not easy to strip naked, but we have to tear the clothes of our bodies to get attention. It shocks people, and they understand that this means that in our country, the situation is very serious.
20-year-old Inna Chevchenko has long blonde hair and at the moment is still wearing a shirt with the print of a yellow and blue circle. Two breasts in the Ukrainian national colors. This is the trademark of the women's group Femen, which in 2008 began its naked protests on the streets of Ukraine. Inna is one of the three organizers. Femen started off with protests against sex tourism and prostitution. Today, the protests are directed against fascism and racism. Femen co-founder Alexandra Chevchenko, known as Sasha, is handing out military-style hot pants and handouts with definitions for words like fascism or anti-Semitism. Some of the women are reading with interest. One of them is Diana, who is studying religion and philosophy.
Of course, I know what these words mean, but we have to make sure that everyone understands. We don't want any silly mistakes when someone gives an interview after the protest.
Cameramen and photographers are closely following the preparations. Most of them are male and obviously enjoying what they see. No one wants to say that on tape, though, although Sasha gives full absolution.
Of course, I am always quite embarrassed to be naked in front of all these cameramen and photographers, but they are our assistants in a way. Without them, the world wouldn't know about us, our ideas, and the problems we address.
And then they're off to the Maidan, Kiev's main square. Directed by Sasha, they take up their positions, tear off their tops, raise one arm in the air and shout, "Ukrainian women against fascism." In front of them, around 50 video and photo journalists are competing for the best position.
50% of the people understand what we're doing. The other half thinks that we're crazy.
Some critics say that by showing off their naked bodies, femen are part of the cliché they are fighting against. But others applaud them for shaking up an otherwise largely passive society, which has grown tired of protests since the Orange Revolution in 2004 and the disappointments that followed. And femen certainly have succeeded in attracting the international media's attention. And that can only increase at the European Football Championship in 2012, when the demonstrators can prove that they are more than just a PR stunt. Mareike Aden, Kiev.
Dubai's low-cost carrier Fly Dubai on Wednesday announced its entry into Ukraine with the launch of three flights to three cities. The flights will begin September the 16th. Fly Dubai CEO Khaled Al-Khaled said, "The potential to develop economic relationship between Ukraine and the United Arab Emirates is huge, and I am confident Fly Dubai's three new destinations will have a large stimulant effect on this relationship." "The international airport in Kiev," he said, "is an impressive modern airport, and we've been granted the privilege to flying into the prestigious Terminal F, a terminal not usually offered to low-cost airlines. Ukraine is the eighth most visited country in the world, and its location at the crossroads of Central, East, North, and South Europe has long made it a popular tourist destination and transit spot within the region." And that was a look at some of the headlines making news in Ukraine for the week ending May 27th. If you wish to subscribe to this in iTunes or download this program, just visit the Nash Holos page at www.pcjmedia.com. I'm Keith Parron.
Thank you.
from a CD called Airmail Music, that was Lubostok from Ukraine with Vesel. Tune in to Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. AM 1320 on the radio dial in Vancouver and streaming at am1320.com. The international edition airs on the PCJ Radio Network on shortwave AM and FM and every weekend on PCJ Internet Radio, and that's at pcjmedia.com. Podcasts can be found at the Nash Holos website for the Vancouver edition, nashholos.com, and the international PCJ Radio edition at pcjmedia.com. And both editions are available on iTunes. А на жаль, ми вже скінчили нашу програму. Вже час додому і сказати до побачення, але перед тим я хочу залишити вас такими словами мудрості. Там усе найкраще буває, де нас немає. And our proverb of the week translates as things are always better somewhere else. Well, that may be true sometimes, but I wouldn't say always, and I can say for sure, because starting June 1st, right here on Nash Holos, PCJ Media is going to be running a contest, including Nash Holos, and that will give listeners of this program and of other PCJ programs a chance to win one of four shortwave radios. That's right. So make sure that you tune in for full details on the next edition of Nash Holos. But that just about wraps things up for this edition. So to take us to the end of our program, we have the Playboy Band from Edmonton and the Kozachuk. I'm Paulette Demchuk-McQuarrie on behalf of all of us here at Nash Holos and PCJ Radio. Thanks so much for listening. Till next time, do побачення.